Hello and welcome to our Easter NL full-time podcast, in which we'll review Good Friday's games and look ahead to Bank Holiday Mondays. It's a bit of an in-betweener, if you like, and we may have a debate after recording as to what this podcast should be called, but there's my opening offer, the in-betweeners. So I'm Rob Worrell. Joining me as we record this on Saturday morning, despite a terrible fallout with his laptop this morning. I'm not sure which one's come off worst in the battle, but a very good morning to Joe Pope.
Yeah, morning, Rob. And it is a good Friday, but it's very much not been a good weekend for me on all fronts. But yeah, obviously we'll get into that.
Also joining us and looking slightly calmer and cooler, despite one or two off the ball challenges himself, is Dickie Wharton, Richard Wharton yourself.
Good afternoon. Oh, good morning. It is almost afternoon, but yes, good morning. Still made it in by 10 minutes. Good to see you both.
Depends what time you got out of bed, really.
Yeah, the clocks haven't changed yet.
All right, on to Friday's action. And in perhaps Chesterfield aside, the tightest, most all-encompassing National League for years, it was a fantastic Friday for Oldie, for Gateshead and Bromley in the promotion race, and a stinker for Aldershot, Halifax and Oldham. In the scrap between the entire bottom half to avoid the bottom four places and the dreaded drop, it was a fabulous day for Eastleigh, Maidenhead and York, and a foul one for Dorking, Kidderminster, Wealdstone and Woking. Chaps, before we get into the detail, I just wanted to come briefly to you both. Is it me getting carried away with this? Because my team are involved at the other end, this team or this season or what? Because it just seems like everybody's involved. Every match has got something riding on it. And it's just been an incredible season, even for this league, Joe.
Obviously we always expect it to be a really closely contested league, but I think even more so this year, especially at the drop. York obviously got their third win under Hinchwood yesterday, and they're still only 5 points on the drop. There's still loads of work to do. So it's been a really good season already, and it's going to be a really good end to the season. Obviously your team's still in the playoffs, but there's two teams that could still catch them. So, yeah, it's going to make for a really interesting end to the season, as you'd expect for this crazy league.
And Dickie, I know you're kind of involved a little bit lower down in the pyramid now, but you obviously watch it each week with us, and you've talked about it for the last 5, 6 years or so on this pod. Can you ever remember at this stage of the season when so many teams were still involved in the shake-up at the top and the bottom?
No, I'm not sure that I can. Obviously, for the last couple of years, we've had a couple of two-horse races for the title. We've had a pretty much a one-horse race this year. But the compression between the teams below is quite something, really. So yeah, it's wide open still as to who's going to be. Well, I'm not sure people necessarily be celebrating on the last day of the season if they stay up. They probably will, with relief. But yeah, look, it's still there for absolutely anybody, isn't it? At both the top and the bottom.
Yeah, absolutely. So we gave, quite rightly, of course, Chesterfield all the plaudits last week. And I guess the lazy narrative would have been, oh, let's see if they turn up this Saturday. Well, they certainly turned up against York, and they took the lead through Joe Quigley, who's nicely into double figures for the season now. But, Dickie, York came back to turn it around. And the incredible thing for me is just a couple of weeks ago, as I travelled up to York on the back of their 6-1 defeat to Altrincham, York have done it again, three on the bounce. They've come from behind to beat Chesterfield at the LNER Stadium. And ridiculously, from dead, buried, gone, they sit this morning 16th.
Yeah, it's been quite a turnaround in the last couple of games, three games for York. That absolute shellacking they got did look like the sort of I don't know. It can look like the death throes of a team that's in severe trouble. But I don't know. Maybe reaching a low point enabled them to sort of turn things around. I guess sometimes you need to go as low as you can do before you come back stronger. And it's forced a few people at York into a corner, I would imagine. But fair play to them, they've come out fighting. And for what they're planning, and for the appointment of Adam Hinshelwood, and what that might mean in terms of the style of football and whatever next season, that's something they wanted to be able to try and implement still in the National League rather than have to do it in the National League North. And it looks like they've given themselves a really good chance of that now.
Perhaps the oddest, the strangest battle in the National League is the one for second and third place, which, let's face it, means the best part of nothing as long as you're in the, you're in the top three. And that's been between Barnet and Bromley for a while. Bromley, after just 3 wins in their last 13 National League matches, went to Meadowbank, where Dorkin were desperate, Joe, for something, scraps, point, 3 points if possible. But they found Bromley in one of their more resistant moods, and it was a rather familiar name that got Bromley going in that one.
Yeah, Michael Cheek, and I think that's now he's up to. I saw he's up to 100 goals for Bromley now, since he's gone there. So, big goal for them, and as they have done all season virtually. If they've taken the lead, they've been able to defend it really, really well. And so, a key component of that is Callum Reynolds, and he obviously managed to get himself on the score sheet as well. Obviously, as for Dorkin, they've had lots of change this week. Obviously, got rid of Joe Cook. Brought back Isaac Philpott and Aaron Cole into the fold. Both of those were on the bench. And there was obviously they had to do lots of change in the game yesterday. They brought two subs on at half time, Jimmy Muir and Alfie Rutherford, to try and change things. And, you can't, you certainly can't say that Mark White's not trying. He's trying everything in his power to try and get them going. But it just seems at the moment that everything he is trying isn't actually working. So yeah, obviously it's a tough game anyway, but another disappointing to another defeat.
Yeah, Dorking slipped into the bottom four a few weeks ago and haven't really looked like getting out of it. I think they're 4 or 5 points adrift now of a position of safety. And with just 5 or 6 games left, it's starting to look a very, very difficult challenge for Mark White. Let's state the obvious, Dorking Wanderers as a football club, 12 promotions in 24 years, have never been in a relegation battle. I guess you could argue they were in it for a while last year and then pulled clear, didn't they? But it certainly would be something new and different for Mark White and his men. In the other team that we just talked about in the top three there, Barnet, they went away to Solihull Moors, and despite going behind early on to James Clark, they turned things around by half time. Nicky Kabamba and then Adam Thompson got the goals for them. And it looked like they were on track for all 3 points, Dickie. But a certain player who you've seen many times do what he did struck late on.
Yes, he did. It was Matty Warburton who, probably a bread and butter goal if you want to use a Warburton pun, and I do, so I have. But yeah, it's a good point that for Solihull in the circumstances and how well that Barnet are doing at the moment, that will feel like 2 points lost to Barnet, I'm sure, when you are 2-1 up and there's only a couple of minutes left on the game. I think Warburton had only been involved for 5 minutes as well, having come on in the 83rd minute. So a bit of a master stroke, a super sub introduction there from Andy Wing. And yeah, I mean, it keeps both of them in they're more than in contact with those playoff race. They're right in there, aren't they? I mean, I'm sure both of them would have wanted all 3 points, but I don't think a point each necessarily harms either of them too much.
Fair enough. The two big winners in the playoff race on Friday were Gateshead and Altrincham. And the interesting thing for that one, about that one for me, is that both of those teams have spent a little bit of time in recent weeks just outside of the playoff positions. But after a really, really good week for both sides, 6 points out of six, they both sit now firmly in the playoff positions. And they went about things different ways. Gateshead beat Rochdale by 1-0. Apparently, it was a really, really tight game between two good football and possession-based sides with not too many clear-cut opportunities. I don't know if either of you've seen it, but it was a wonderful goal. Joe, it was Ed Francis, who we watched in action not too recently or not too long ago, who threaded the ball through. Perfect weight for Dejean Brown, who, well, is certainly in the form of his young life.
Yeah, 9 goals in 8 now for Dejean Brown on loan from Derby. He's having a really, really good second half of this season. And as you say, Ed Francis, I don't know whether anybody saw the goals that they scored against Hartlepool in midweek, but there were two really sumptuous passes from Ed Francis in that one to set up Dejean Brown. So, yeah, they'll be really pleased. I think Gateshead fans were a little bit concerned because they went and signed Sonny Fish, striker from. There was at Welling on loan from Crawley in the week before this game. So they were a little bit concerned that maybe that meant Dejean Brown was going to be recalled. But they'll be pleased that he's back amongst the goals. And yeah, they're doing really well, Gateshead. Really, really are motoring now.
Yeah, I mean, it's amazing how many people you hear sort of little sound bites, bits and bobs around the game, and how people that, despite the fact that they are where they are in the league, people say Gateshead are the best team in the league. I think they are on their day. I think when they get it sweet and they get it right, as they did in midweek, and gave Wealdstone a good hiding, didn't they? 7 goals. They really showed what they can do. Altrincham, Dickie, coming on to you to talk about Kidderminster and against Altrincham. That was an intriguing battle because it absolutely affected again the battle at both ends. And Alti seem to be getting a little bit of a trait, don't they? Somebody punches them on the nose in the first half, and that gets them going. And they went behind in the week and went on to win 4-1. And it was a similar story on Friday.
It was. I'm sure that Phil Parkinson would probably prefer them not to have to take one in the face before they come out fighting. But look, the fact is that they have shown their ability to, respond to setbacks, and that's a real positive for them. I think that's, well, just having a look through now, I think that's 5 wins in their last 7 after they'd gone on a run of 5 defeats in a row. And I think people thought that Altrincham were doing something that they've done a number of times in recent seasons, and going to get themselves into a good position and then just close the season in really rather dismal fashion. But yeah, they look as if they're bucking that a little bit this year. There's hardly a draw in their recent results either, so it's either all 3 points or nothing. But I guess sometimes, that's actually a positive. You can draw too many games, can't you? And you can be on an unbeaten run, but it can have too many draws in it. It's a big blow for Kidderminster losing that one yesterday, and they led through Zach Brown in the 19th minute. But yeah, goals from Linney and then 2 from Chris Conn-Clarke. We've spoken about him many, many times this season, and the ability he has. And yeah, Kidderminster, having looked like they were clawing themselves out of trouble, are unfortunately right back in it again. And they're going to need to find a second wind under Phil Brown if they're going to get themselves out.
Absolutely. There is a little bit of a gap emerging. We'll perhaps take a closer look as we finish reviewing the games. But yeah, for Kidderminster, I mean, they've lost very little underneath Phil Brown. That would have been a bruising defeat at home to Altrincham. Altrincham have just strengthened their position in the playoffs along with Gateshead. And Gateshead, who have only played 41 games, are actually now within 4 of Bromley and within 6 of Barnet, so there may still be a battle for those top three spaces. Solihull Moors, who everybody's wanted to write off week in, week out, but they just stay there and they've doggedly got that late equaliser for a point. They're on 67 points, the same as Altrincham. And then Aldershot somehow still find themselves in the playoffs despite a rather disastrous Good Friday at Maidenhead, who will have left York Road yesterday cock-a-hoop at a win that pulled them from 1 point ahead of the relegation zone to 4 points clear of it. And not just 4 points clear, but 4 goals on the day. Aldershot got devved. Can we move on? No, I'm only kidding. But full credit to Maidenhead, who started like a house on fire, a couple of set piece goals in the first 6 minutes. And it was that man, Rémy Clérima. He just knows where to be, doesn't he, at the right place at the right time. Not for the first time scoring against Aldershot. Shot's got a foothold in the game, and I think it went on to around about the hour mark, still at 2-0. Brave, difficult, straightforward in his case, decision from Tommy Widdrington to start Pollard on the bench for that one. Some rumours that he got a slight knock in midweek training, so that might have made the manager's mind up, maybe wanting to bring him on fresh towards the end of that one, and then have him champion at the bit for Dorking. But two penalties, we won't dwell on that. I think probably one was, one wasn't. Everybody's always got their opinions on them. But a rather unfortunate second yellow for Dylan Kadji, who's been superb on loan from Bristol City for Aldershot. Some of the fans immediately, I'm talking about 5, 6, 7 feet away from that, have said adamantly it wasn't a penalty. I didn't have the best view. But what it did do is it gave Charlie Adams the opportunity to put the game to bed with the best part of half an hour left. And he did so again a while after Kean Harries had brought down Tristan Abrahams. So Maidenhead played an absolute blinder. They did absolutely everything you'd want them to do if you're a Maidenhead fan. Full credit to Alan Devonshire. A horrible, horrible day at the office for Aldershot Town. But bizarrely, they were lifted. When they came off, looked at the league table and saw that the two chasing teams, realistically, Joe, the only two teams, not mathematically, but realistically, the only two teams that could nick a playoff spot off them, both stumbled as well.
Yeah, I think I'm probably going to go as harsh as to say it's probably only one team, because given how poor Oldham are, we'll come on to speak about them. But I think it's only really Halifax that's got a chance of overturning Aldershot, because I certainly don't see Oldham being 4 points better than Aldershot within 5 games. But yeah, it would have been a boost to Tommy Widdrington. And I think probably the message from him to the change room after would have probably been, yes, we're disappointed we've lost, but we're still in a good position. So let's just go on to Monday, and that's what you've got to do in this silly season, as you call it.
I think, if I'm honest and brutally honest, I think the top 10 now looks right. Now, the league table, they always say, doesn't lie. It does a little bit with Southend, of course, because they've had 10 points deducted. But I think it's sitting about right. I think Barnet, Chesterfield were deserving champions. Barnet and Bromley have been second and third best teams. And then I think Gateshead and Altrincham and Solihull Moors have been consistent throughout the season. And then I think you have got Aldershot, Halifax, and Oldham. I'm not going to write them off just yet. Still battling away, perhaps, for that last spot. Obviously, there could be some movement within the table. But I think Aldershot, when they're good, they're very good. When they're bad, they're horrid. Halifax Town simply haven't scored enough goals, but they're very, very hard to beat. That probably ends up with one or two too many draws. And Oldham, just not consistent enough. Overall, just looking at the detail of those games, Halifax went down 1-0 at Hartlepool, who sit 14th now, 52 points. And I think from 14th upwards, most of the teams would say probably one more win should do it in terms of safety. As for Oldham Athletic, well, Dickie, it went horribly wrong for them at Boundary Park.
Yes, it did. And this is I saw quite a lot of adverse comment from Oldham fans after this one, and I think AFC foiled. I think there was some comment from an Oldham fan about losing to a pub team, and which AFC foiled's own social media admin picked up on. I think there was a tweet at full time of 3-1 to the pub team or something like that. I mean, look, the relative histories and everything of these clubs would tell you that Oldham Athletic fans probably would expect to beat AFC Fylde, but Fylde have been on a really, really good run of lately, and they were 3-0 up after 33 minutes. Nick Horton, speak about him often enough, he got them going. Adam Long with the second, and then there was a goal from Ethan Mitchell as well. Oldham did get a goal before half time through Dan Gardner, but yeah, looks as if they then laboured a bit. Mike Fondup-Tallam got a red card after an hour. That would have been particularly helpful. battle for the Oldham cause. And a few weeks ago, having looked as if they were, a team with upward momentum and looking as if they were going to claim a playoff place, it's now not looking that straightforward for Oldham Athletic at all. They're 4 points away from Aldershot. And just having that same number of games played, I think there's probably really only one playoff spot that Oldham can aim for, which is that seventh one, which would mean being away from home in both an eliminator and then a semi-final if they got there as well. So they're making that route up back out of this division very hard for themselves if that's what they want to do.
Yeah, I've got to be honest. We've talked about Aldershot and Solihull overachieving in the National League this season, no doubt, despite the instability of changing manager again through the season, with the clout that they've got, the support they've got, the budget that they've got, a really good, positive, healthy new owner, and one of the best managers at this level as well, and Mickey Mellon, it is an underachievement from Oldham, but it's not too late for them. If they can win perhaps four of their last five, then they'll give themselves still a shout at the playoffs, I think, anyway. A word for Oxford City, relegated a couple of weeks ago, but they got themselves a 1-0 win. And Joe, just coming back to you on this one, the biggest reason why everybody said Wealdstone will be okay this season was the sheer number of games that they have in hand. They're starting to plough their way through those games now, but a pointless couple of games for them, heavy defeat in the week. And they are the team that sits closest to the relegation zone from those outside of it right now. And whatever fixtures Wealdstone have got for the rest of the season, they'd have looked at yesterday, Oxford City away, already relegated, and said that is a must-win 3 points, but they didn't get any.
No, and I think that is a really damaging defeat as well, because obviously, Oxford City are already down, and they would have looked at that and thought, we can get 3 points in that one. And yeah, no, Noble will have to do a lot of soul searching after that. Obviously, they made a couple of changes. They brought De Silva back in, Alarakia back in. They were both on international duty in the last. Or last weekend, Toby Adeyemo, he signed from Watford. He was given an introduction from the bench just after the hour mark. I did speak to one of the Wealdstone fans after the game. He said it was a little bit confusing as to what the plan was yesterday. They brought in Adeyemo, who's been doing really well at Watford in their academy, and then started a wing back up front, and then took off both of their threats, De Silva and Obiero, in the second half, and brought on a wing back. Really confusing for them. And we always said that they've got those games in hand. Well, it's no good having games in hand if you don't win them. Really tough.
Exactly right. Congratulations to Dagenham and Redbridge. They're not mathematically safe, but I think three more points yesterday, they've moved up to 12th, and they have by far, of all the teams that were looking over their shoulder, the best goal difference, plus seven now. Really good, solid, workmanlike job done by Ben Strevens this season at Dagenham. And for me, perhaps one of the most eye-catching scorelines of Good Friday. I'm going to stay with you on this one, Joe. A word first on Dagenham, who got the job done, but a rather horrific-looking scoreline at home for Boreham Wood, who, just 7 days ago or 6 days ago, whatever it was, I sat here and said I'd back them in a straight race over these last few games to have the fight to stay up. Now you'd have to question that, wouldn't you? Boreham Wood won, Dagenham and Redbridge four.
I would say a really uncharacteristic defeat, but we've kind of lost that, Bournemouth identity this year. In recent years, we've had them as this really tough to play against, really defensively dogged team, but they haven't had that this season. And when you've relied so much on that in the previous seasons, when you've then lost that, it's, they're not the most openly attacking side either. So, yeah, really disappointing for them. And obviously, Luke Garrard called out a couple of players after the game. As for Dagenham and Redbridge, I think Ben Stevens has done a really good job. I echo what you say. I think people were doubting him at the start of the season. Obviously, a couple of defeats against teams lower in the pyramid in the cup competitions, but they've done really well. Who needs any Effiong, hey, when you've got Josh Reese who can score 15 goals for you? Another two yesterday. And actually, looking at their record this year, they've had 15 different scorers. So when you think that they've had two players who've hit 15 and they've had 15 different scorers, just goes to show what a really good collective effort it's been. And yeah, I think they'll be pleased with how they've adapted to Ben Strevens this year.
For Boreham, I think the most horrific stat is 70 goals conceded. You know, we used to start season, do our predictions on the pod, who's going to get the most clean sheets, and we'd go Boreham Wood, wouldn't we? That's really what's gone, and they've been a little bit toothless at times in attack. They are by no means out of it yet, though, and they will continue to, or Luke Garrod will continue to try and find the answers and the solutions in that scenario. Another big game between two sides at the bottom of the table that are not quite safe yet was Woking against Eastleigh. Neither side, let's face it, with the squads they've got, with the ammunition that they've got, particularly Eastleigh, should be even mentioned in that battle. But sadly, they do find themselves there. It was a tight one. And oh my goodness, Joe, the irony of the goal scorer for Eastleigh.
Yeah, Solomon Wabukai, obviously formerly of Woking. That probably goes to tell you a story as to obviously going back against his former side and scoring the winning goal. It does actually, looking at the team sheet, it does go to show the amount of change that this Woking team's undergone under Michael Daw, that they had four players who have shirt numbers in the 30s. Yeah. A really disappointing defeat for them. Again, at home, you know, we've said how poor their home record's been. So they'd be really disappointed with that one. I see that Eastleigh have made a signing this week. So certainly, I assume it is, but I haven't seen him published earlier in the season. Jake Vokins, formerly of Southampton, obviously with Kelvin Davis's links to the Saints, he's come in. And you know, got a clean sheet on his debut. So yeah, really good weekend for Eastleigh.
Just one more match to cover. Ebbsfleet drew 1-1 against Southend. If we'd had a guess on who the scorers might have been in that one, we might have said Dominic Polian and Harry Cardwell. And if we had, we'd have been fully correct. In isolation, probably a decent enough point for Ebbsfleet, and one that adds to their tally. But despite their terrific form of late, they're not safe yet, Joe, are they? They, just two places above the relegation zone, and any loss of form and the ability to pick up points regularly over the remaining five games, and they could yet drop into it.
Yeah, and that just underlines how difficult and how close the National League has been this season. You know, they look like the team, given that their run that they went on, that they were, you know, home and dry and clear of the drop. But then a couple of poor results, and they're back in it. So yeah, obviously they've shown that they are able to win games under Danny Searle, but they've got to make sure they actually go and do that, otherwise that they could be pulled into trouble.
Well, that kind of wraps things up for the National League. I think we've talked probably enough about the league tables and the places. Dickie, any final points from you? Any team that's particularly catching your eye that you think might do really well in the remaining few games, or any teams that are on that dreaded slippery slope into trouble?
No, I don't think there are. I think the beauty of it is that anything could still happen. And as much as you know, we've been, goodness knows how many times have we been made to look foolish on this podcast by, you know, it looking like that a team is doomed or a team is uncatchable, and then lo and behold, something happens to pull the rug from underneath you. So no, I'm just sort of enjoying watching it really, and looking forward to. It's going to go down to the final day, isn't it, for some of these issues? It absolutely is, and. You know, I know that's not great for the supporters, those teams who are involved, but for those of us who are watching from the outside, it's you know, that's all you can ask for, really, that a league is competitive enough that the issues only get decided on the final day.
We're going to look now at the National League South with Joe. And Joe, we nearly always start with Yeovil. we have to start with the Oval this week because you were there, and it was the two sides that you watch most. They did battle, they came head to head, and I guess there weren't too many surprises in the result.
No, there wasn't. 3-0 win for Yeovil. Obviously, Torquay coming into this off the back of a win against Hampden and Richmond, looking to follow that up. Perhaps not so much with another win, given how good Yeovil are, but with a good performance. And giving them their due, I thought the first half performance was good from Torquay. They came out on the front foot. They came out overly aggressive. I've never seen them press and harry and, you know, try and commit Yeovil as much as they were. But obviously Yeovil, they've managed to find a way to grind out results this season, and they did that again. A quite fortuitous opener for them, a shot from Charlie Cooper from range, which happened to fall into the path of Jamari Clark, who couldn't miss from a couple of yards. And from there, it was, as we've seen from Yeovil for much of this season, that when they get the first goal, given how good they are defensively, they don't very rarely give it away. And they didn't yesterday. 3-0 win for them. And as Mark Cooper said to, first thing Mark Cooper said to me after the game was complete control. And that's exactly what Yeovil had in the second half. Jamari Clark managed to add a second goal to wrap it up. Really good move, a turn and spin and shot across goal. But the pick of the goals was Jordan Young. Lovely work from Frank Newbell to cut the ball back into Jordan Young's path on the edge of the box. And without taking a touch, he smashed the ball home in off the underside of the bar. And, you know, Yeovil are worthy champions. Obviously, Torquay, another disappointing defeat. And I caught up with manager Aaron Downes after the game. Aaron, disappointing afternoon, 3-0 defeat. Good start to the game, but what happened after that?
Disappointing, definitely. We're in a position where we come in with a good shape and a good structure and try to frustrate them. And then it's a disappointing goal to concede from our point of view on the first one. There's an element of luck from their point of view. There's potentially a foul. Don't want to make excuses because that's not the kind of person I am. But potentially a foul on halfway line, and then a little bit of luck in their element where we get a block on it and it drops their player and they put it in and 1-0. So when you, with the way we set up and the shape and the structure we had was good, frustrated them for long periods, and then you can see the goal, then it's difficult to then change that mindset. And again, we knew we just had to stay in the game, and the second and third goal was a disappointment from our point of view. It's a hell of a strike from Jordan Young. He's a good player. They're a good side, great squad, and they'll be worthy winners come the end of the season. But disappointing from our point of view in certain moments, but still happy in certain elements as well.
And your side came out quite aggressive on the front foot from the start. Are you disappointed with the referee, the fact that he was quick to put two of your defenders on a booking and then didn't give any of their defenders a booking? And
he's got to do what he's got to do on the day. You know, it wasn't a tactic where we come out and we wanted to come out and be aggressive and get in the faces in the right areas, allow him to have it in other areas. That's not going to hurt us. But the tactic was to make sure that we're strong and aggressive. You're coming away from home to the top of the league. You've got to make sure you, and they're a good side. You've got to make sure you stamp your authority and quiet in the crowd. And we did that until the goal, you know. So up until the goal, the whole first half, Mark Helsey's not had a save to make. You know, they had a couple of shots, but no saves to make. And so our discipline and our work rate, I can't fault the lads in any way, shape or form.
And obviously you were really good without the ball. Is it perhaps a day where you miss a player like Aaron Jarvis to get you up the pitch and provide you a little bit more quality?
Yeah, and a Kevin Dawson and a Ross Marshall, you know, they're players. But the disappointing thing, we still had in the first half, great opportunities to have an attempt on goal, and we just didn't quite have that final ball or that final little bit of quality in the end product in the final third. So we knew we were going to have 40% possession. It wasn't a negative tactic; it was a tactic where we knew that we had to be right structurally behind the ball to limit the opposition space and areas to get into, and then we knew on the counter attack that we had to be clinical, and we just. didn't have that cutting edge just in that final third. And so that was a little bit disappointing. But again, can't fault the lads. And we have to move on quick because we've got a game on Monday.
And one of the players that really stood out, I thought, was Ethan Archer. Obviously signed from a couple of leagues below. How brilliant has he been coming back in and doing a real shift?
He done really well second half when we got the ball to him and the game stretched a little bit, and that's the kind of player he is. He's fit, he's athletic, he's got good touch on the ball. We've had to work a lot with him as far as the areas he's got to get into and the areas he can do his work, and I thought he was really good today. And you know, he's been chomping at the bit in training, looking really sharp. So it was a comfortable decision to play him and put him in, and I knew on a counter attack he'd be good for us. And I thought in the second half he sort of was a bright spark for us, him and Will Jenkins-Davies.
And obviously you say you're disappointed, but the focus is Monday. You must be still confident that we can stay up.
Definitely, yeah, you know, more than comfortable. You know, we've got a good side, and we've got Western Supermare have had a good result today on Monday. You know, a very mixed side at the minute, so we'll have to see, because Tuesday night watched the game and seen it, very disappointed they were, but then they've obviously had a good reaction today, so we've got to see what sort of side they'll have. But more than comfortable in this team, this squad, and we've got to make sure that we sort out our away form, because we've got four away games after the Western game, but to teams all around us, so it's really important that we're move on from this very quick, which we spoke about in there. And we go into Monday confident, knowing that we're very good at home.
Yeah, that was Aaron Downes. Been around in football for a long time. Somebody who certainly doesn't lack confidence in himself and his ability. And he's going to need it, because Torquay are just 4 points clear of the relegation zone. And God knows, Joe, they've got enough going off the pitch without trying to cope with a back-to-back relegation as well this season. Obviously, partially as a result of that points deduction. Chelmsford remain firmly in second place, 7 points behind Yeovil, having played a game more, and 8 points ahead of the side in third place. And they backed it up with another solid home win. And whilst the discussion in the North, the South and the National League's top division will be quite heated, I'm sure, as to who the player of the season is in that league, I think this one's been sewn up in the South. He's at it again. Another rough time, another double, another brace. And he's been quite superb, hasn't he? Perhaps the only thing that might stop him getting it is the fact that he hasn't been there all season. Charlie Ruff for Chelmsford.
Yeah, there's one player that we might come on to talk to, or will come on to talk to, that might have a say on the Player of the Season award in the division. But yeah, Charlie Ruff's got to be up there. Brilliant season for him. Two goals. And then two goals from George Alexander, who, funny enough, also played for Dartford earlier in the season. He helped himself to two goals. And yeah, Chelmsford are the pick of the rest for a reason. They are the second best side in the division. And when you've got players like Charlie Ruff and George Alexander up front with a fairly watertight defence, then you aren't going to be too far off the pace, and that's exactly where they find themselves.
Yeah, Braintree stay third. They're really tidy, handy, little perfect, really. 1-0 away win at St Albans. Blair with a goal there in the first half. So they are in third place. And fourth in the National League South are Maidstone United. And, well, they had perhaps a difficult-looking game away to Eastbourne Borough, who are fighting for their lives. But two red cards, Joe, for Eastbourne Borough. One of those in the 26th minute, one of them in the 53rd. Made the task for Maidstone a little bit easier.
Yeah, it was. And obviously Maidstone would have seen that as a game that they should have won fairly comfortably. And in the end, they did. Sam Corn, who's probably been the pick of the midfielders this year in the National League South, he got them ahead from the penalty spot. Before Eastbourne were reduced to 10 men, Sam Beard, formerly, still very much the son of former manager Mark Beard, he was sent off for two bookings. Before Eastbourne actually drew level, Pierce Bird, he got a goal before he himself was sent off. And from there, it was pretty much plain sailing for Maidstone. Maybe the quickest hat-trick we've seen this season. 9 minutes for Lamar Reynolds. He chipped in with three goals, sandwiched in between with a goal from Matt Rush. And back to winning ways to Maidstone in emphatic fashion.
Well, from a Pierce Bird that had a shocking day, that red card, to another Pierce who had yet another good day, and I'm sure he's the person you're referring to, as he starts to get nearer to 40 goals than 30 now. Ollie Pierce with another brace, as Worthing dispatched Havant and Waterlooville, and perhaps Havant and Waterlooville's hopes as well, in a 5-1 win.
Yeah, and pretty much like the Eastbourne game, actually. Worthing took the lead through Ollie Pierce. He got his first of the afternoon before Havant and Waterlooville managed to come back into the game through Brandon Wilson with a goal just before half-time. But in the second half, very much like Maidstone, Worthing put on the afterburners and managed to see it out with a comfortable 5-1 victory. Goals from shots Loney, Tommy Willard, Danny Cashman, who obviously scored that brace live on TNT Sports. Ollie Pierce managed to grab his second from the penalty spot. And then a goal for Chadwick, the youngster there, Finley Chadwick. We did a piece on him at the start of the season, so it's nice to see him in the goals. And after a few disappointing results at Worthing, they'll be pleased to get back to winning ways. I will just add a point, given that we've spoken about Maidstone and Worthing. I see in the week that Michael Klass, formerly of Aldershot Town and Southend United, has actually left Worthing to join Maidstone United. And the Worthing have brought in another former Shots player in Cody Lance Foster this week.
Absolutely. Just looking at the bottom end of the National League South for a minute, I think that might be just about done and dusted now for Havant and Waterlooville. First of all, they are 7 points away from a position of safety. They've only got five games left. One of the teams above them, Taunton Town, have seven more points than them and still have nine games left. So whichever way you cut it, it's looking pretty desperate now for Havant and Waterlooville. And, you know, even if they were to win their final five games, that wouldn't guarantee anything. Dover, of course, have already almost, I think, mathematically gone as well. 23 points. So they're 17 adrift of safety with only 15 to play for. So I guess it was yesterday, Joe, that confirmed their relegation defeat 1-0 away to Welling United, who are almost done in terms of getting to a position of safety.
Yeah, and I have to give a huge amount of credit to Rod Stringer. When they got rid of Danny Blur, we were a little bit surprised, obviously, given that he's a good manager in this division. And they brought in Rod Stringer, and the upturn in fortune since he's come into the football club has been mesmeric. Obviously, everything that they've had thrown at them, they've managed to react really, really well. They lost Tristan Abrahams to Maidenhead United. They bounced back from that. They lost Sonny Fish to Gateshead in the week, and they bounced back again with another win. Ricardo Di Trioli, formerly of St Albans, he got the only goal of the game with a quarter of an hour to play, and Welling managed to see that out for 3 points. And I'm not sure where they would be since Rod Stringer turned up in terms of the whole league, but I'm sure someone's got that stat, but they must be at least top half, moving towards the top seven since he's taken charge. So a really good end to the season and lots of positives for next year.
Hampton and Richmond, a sixth, a 0-0 draw at home to Tunbridge Angels on Saturday. And look who's popped into that final playoff position. We said we couldn't write them off, and they were involved in the game of the day on Good Friday. Hemel Hempstead 3, Avely 4. Joe, tell us about that one.
Yeah, well, you know, Avely, we keep writing them off, but they keep sticking around. And, Denny Scopes deserves a lot of credit because he's overachieving there by some distance, and another really good win for them. Avely have shown a real ability to come back from two goals down on the road this season. Did it against Torquay United a couple of weeks ago, and they did find themselves two goals down. Michael Falivi with the opener and Smith getting their second for Hemel before two goals in nine minutes. From Charlie Hughes. He got them back on level terms. Avely did actually manage to take the lead through Edwino Vaz. He's had a really good season from left back before George Williams, formerly of Bournemouth, got Hemel level. And it looked as if it was going to be a draw, but Charlie Hughes managed to pop up, seal his hat trick, and get all 3 points for Avery. And, you know, they've just gone quietly about their business, and they now find themselves in the playoffs. And I wouldn't put it past them to finish there either.
Yeah, terrific job done by Danny Scopes and everybody at Averley. Bath sit just outside the playoff positions. They were frustrated on Saturday. They looked good for a home win against Weymouth, thanks to Joe Raines' 22nd-minute goal. But 11 minutes from time, Ezio Torre equalised for Weymouth, who are looking for a new manager, Joe. And funnily enough, Mark Molesley's just left Hazen Yeading as well.
Yeah, I think that might be convenient timing. I wouldn't be at all surprised if we see something maybe before Monday, maybe not. But obviously, yeah, Bobby Wilkinson. I have to give a word for Bobby Wilkinson because I think he's done a fantastic job, and quite a lot of the Weymouth fans are pretty disappointed that he's gone. I did hear rumblings that perhaps the playing squad weren't happy with him and his methods, but certainly his methods have worked this season, got him into a comfortable mid-table position. And yeah, a really good point on the road yesterday, obviously, in his first game without him, Ezio Torre getting another goal. He's been brilliant on loan from Watford. And yeah, they've had a really good season. I think Mark Molesley, obviously, I think there's a little bit of sentiment behind it, given what he did previously there. And obviously, yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if he puts his hat in the ring.
Yeah, me neither. Interesting one with Bobby Wilkinson. We know from his time at Wealdstone and the like that he's a manager who loves to plan ahead and take early decisive action in terms of the planning for the next season. And I wonder if that was part of what happened there. It was mutual termination. And perhaps he didn't feel he was going to be back the way he wanted for next season. So Wilkinson moves on, but I don't think he'll be without a club, at least at that level, for very long. And again, just focusing as we were just outside the playoffs in the National League South, St Albans, with that 1-0 defeat, dropped to ninth. And then Farnborough and Chippenham were frustrated, mainly because the game was off on Good Friday. But a mention for Farnborough's win in midweek away at Weston-super-Mare, which was their sixth consecutive win. And Joe, we spoke about this one off air, didn't we? Farnborough going into the final month or so of the season on the fringes of the playoffs, but they're in a very different situation in terms of their player availability this year than they were at this time last year.
Yeah, last year, obviously, they came into this time of the season sort of on a downward spiral. That's perhaps a little bit harsh, but certainly didn't have the upward momentum that they have in recent weeks. They managed to do a little bit of squad manoeuvring, some of which was enforced, obviously, through losing Aaron Cole. And they've also decided to move on Harvey Bradbury. But they have brought in a couple of players. I see Ronan Silver, formerly of Crawley and Eastleigh. He came in during the week and he's a capable player on his day. And yeah, they've certainly got momentum. And as is always the way for the playoffs, is there's always that team that finishes with momentum that would be standing a good chance, and they might well, they should certainly feel more confident this year finishing the top seven.
Now, we might have been a bit premature in saying that Hemel 3, Avely 4 was the game of the day. They may argue down at Truro City. They led 2-0 thanks to Andrew Neil, one of them from the penalty spot. But Slough, as they've done so often, particularly at Arbor Park recently, came storming back late on. John Goddard and Gabe George got them level by the 87th minute. But Truro weren't done, were they, Joe?
No, and I think Scott Davis himself said that's the first real time this season he's been disappointed. Obviously, 2-0 down after just about an hour. To get back to 2-2, the first thing you think is make sure you don't lose the game. And he himself admitted that perhaps because they'd scored two goals in 2 minutes and still had a couple of minutes left, that they perhaps were a little bit more attacking and wanted to try and go and get a third. And when that happens, you always are susceptible to conceding at the other end. And yeah, Adam Porter, formerly of Salford, getting the only goal, or sorry, the winning goal for Truro. And big win for them, given that I think they would have been safe anyway, but they've been in and around the bottom four. And yeah, I think Slough have had a good season, and Truro certainly will positive after that one.
One other game to focus on in the National League South. Western Supermare ended a run of four straight defeats with a rather romping home win against Taunton Town. 4-0, four different scorers, Kempster, Reed, Bastin and Joshua. And that just means that the agony for Taunton is prolonged, Joe.
Yeah, really disappointing afternoon for Taunton. But as we've seen all this season, even though they're down near the bottom, Western Supermare are a very, very capable side on their day, very good with the ball. And that's obviously what's happened there yesterday. Really, really good performance from them, four different scorers. They will be more than capable of staying up. And that's certainly helped them.
Looking at the bottom end, just as we finish, Joe, Eastbourne Borough 38 points, Taunton 40, but only played 37, then Dartford on 40, and then your very own Torquay United and Hemel, who've slowly slipped back into it, 45, and Truro 45. What's your take on, the bottom end of the National League South? I mean, Dover gone, having at Waterlooville almost gone, but it's quite a scrap for those to avoid those last two places, isn't it?
It is. I think if I'm probably going to pick a bottom four at this time, it would probably be as it is with Dartford going down in place of Taunton. I just think with the number of games that Taunton have got in hand, given that Dartford have only got five left and that Taunton have got four in hand on them, that I think Taunton, they've shown under Rob Dray that when the going gets really tough, they can put in a performance. Obviously beating Torquay 3-0 on the road, beating Worthing 3-0 on the road. And so I think that they will just about stay in the division. Certainly going to be interesting because as it is with the National League, very, very close. At the other end, I think it's going to be really interesting to see which of that little cluster finishes in the last spot, because I think we are now battling for just one spot. Obviously, disappointing day yesterday for St Albans, who dropped out of it. I don't think if we mentioned that they lost to Braintree, a really big win for Braintree on the road yesterday. And it's going to be interesting. Lots left to play for, which is what we want at this time of the season.
Good stuff. Thank you, Joe. Joe's going to stay with us as we just round up our NL full-time pod this morning with the National League North. And, all bar mathematically, some freak mathematical occurrence, I believe, Dickie, we have some champions, certainly champions elect in the National League North.
Yeah, if you can't get hold of a bottle of champagne in the Tamworth area at the moment, it's because it's all been bought and it's all on ice, because Tamworth are literally 1 point away from clinching back-to-back titles, promoted from the Southern Premier Central last season. And they're looking like, barring an incredible turnaround, they're going to go straight through National League North and into National League for next season. They had a comfortable 3-0 win over Bishop Stortford yesterday. Bishop Stortford already relegated. It did take until the second half for the goals to arrive, but arrive they did. Chris Ray, Nathan Chikuna and Kyle Finn all on target. And the reason that the champagne is on hold is because Scunthorpe United were held at home by Kings Lynn to a goalless draw. So that scotched Scunthorpe's chances of catching them now, because the gap between Scunthorpe and Tamworth can't be bridged, bearing in mind the number of games left to play. It's actually Chorley in third place who are keeping Tamworth waiting. They had a 3-0 victory away at Darlington yesterday. A really positive result for them. Not such a good one for Darlington, obviously, in their battle. Goals from Jack Sampson, Mark Ellis and Mike Calverley for Chorley in that one. Because Chorley have got a game in hand, it does mean technically they could catch Tamworth, but it would mean a massive turnaround in goal difference, as well as a complete collapse from Tamworth. Yeah, it's not going to happen. So if you can forgive people from Tamworth, if they are celebrating already, then I think, you know, that's fair enough, really, because it's going to take something the likes of which we probably haven't seen in the game of football ever, if for Tamworth not to win the title now.
Congratulations to them. I don't think we're being premature at all in that. It's a terrific achievement, back-to-back promotions, and we look forward to welcoming Tamworth into the National League next season. Interestingly for Scunthorpe, not only were they frustrated by that nil-nil draw at home to King's Lynn, a valuable point, by the way, for King's Lynn, they will also they'll have been frustrated by the fact that they can no longer win the title. And they'll be looking over their shoulders, Dickie, won't they? Because there's absolutely no guarantee at the moment just yet that they're going to finish in the top three, because Brackley Town haven't given up that chase, have they? Although they were somewhat frustrated themselves on Friday.
They were yesterday. Brackley had an early kickoff. They kicked off 1 p.m. yesterday at Gloucester at the Tiger Turf Stadium. That's because the Tiger Turf Stadium was being used later on for the Truro City game, which you mentioned in the South Roundup. And yeah, Brackley were held to a 1-1 draw. Harry Pinchard with a goal for Gloucester, which it's not. It's well, I don't think Gloucester are going to be saved, to be honest. They are 10 points from safety now. Technically, it could still happen, but the results they've been getting just don't suggest that they're going to turn this around, unfortunately. It took an 89th minute George Carlisle equaliser for Brackley for them to come away with a point there yesterday. So Gloucester robbed of those extra points at the death, which would have moved them above Banbury and might just sort of given them a little bit more optimism around that. But yeah, Brackley still safely in the playoff places there, but I'm sure they would have wanted all of the points yesterday. And yeah, you're spot on about Scunthorpe. They may not even finish second yet because if Chorley win their game in hand, Chorley will go second.
Absolutely. Looking at the other teams in the playoff chases, chase and in the National League North, there's just 1 point between the next four teams, and they're headed by Boston United, who scraped across the line in the end yesterday. It all started well enough, didn't it, Dickie? We've got Morecambe and Wise and Ant and Dec, and we've also got Mooney and Knowles. They were at it again.
They're inseparable, these pair. And when one finds the target, the other one tends to as well. And yeah, goals from Kelsey Mooney and Jimmy Knowles yesterday, just 4 minutes apart in the first half for Boston against Peterborough. They did have Brad Nicholson sent off for a second yellow card offence in the second half. I mean, he's going to serve a suspension, but you know, I think it'd be a bigger concern if he'd picked one up, which meant he was going to miss three games at this stage because he's an important player for them. Brandon Njoku did get a goal back for Peterborough in the 76th minute, but yeah, Boston. I think we would have expected them to take all 3 points yesterday, and they duly did so.
South Shields not only cemented their position in the playoffs, but they kept Spennymoor Town at bay directly at close quarters by beating them by 2-0. Second half goals for Martin and for Stevenson. And then just focusing back in on that race for around the edge of the playoffs, 1 point between four sides, three of them in, one of them out. Alfreton also got the job done, 1-0 against Rushall Olympic, a Jordan Thewlis goal in the 51st minute. And the other team in that equation, Dickie, just outside, but breathing down the necks of the others, Curzon Ashton, who went and got themselves a win by the odd goal in five.
Yes, they did, and they had one man to thank for this ultimately, Curzon Ashton. A hat trick from midfielder Stefan Molls yesterday got them back into
90
this one.
minutes.
Yeah, JJ Hooper got Blythe on the board in the first half. Molls did equalise early in the second. Dicky Devidits, he put Blythe back ahead in the 62nd minute. And, you know, Blythe needed the points as much as anybody towards the bottom of the division as well. But then Moll scored two goals a minute apart, 72nd, 73rd minute. And yet the Curzon Ashton playoff charge is still, it's still going. Yeah, they still have a great chance of making it.
Yeah, and Chester still have a fair chance. They're 2 or 3 points off the pace, but they got going nicely on Good Friday with a comfortable win away at Buxton and four different scorers in that one.
Yes, there was Ben Andreucci was the first scorer in the game after just 2 minutes. He's on loan from Bolton Wanderers to Buxton. Buxton, of course, are going through this phase at the moment where they know Craig Elliott's not staying on as manager. The post has actually been advertised this week and it does mention them going full time, which is what I'd heard. So, yeah, if you want to get your application in for the Buxton job, do have a look on their website. But it was Chester that came away with all the points yesterday. Goals from Weeks, Burke, Thomas and Piers. And yeah, that was a much needed victory for Chester because their hopes of getting into the playoffs have been slipping. They've been fading home defeat last weekend. But that's a big boost for them.
Warrington have been holding on to the shirt tails and holding on to the belief that despite a terrific first season at this level, they might scrape into those playoffs too. They've slipped a bit further off the place, off the pace, 5 points now behind the playoff pack. And they were a little bit frustrated on Saturday too. They led twice against Scarborough Athletic, but a late equaliser there from Ollie Dyson on loan from York. And funnily enough, the first goal scorer for Scarborough is rather familiar to me as well. Cameron Wilson, of course, was at Scunthorpe last season.
Yeah, I think he's still on loan to them from Scunthorpe this season. And it's a move that's puzzled a few Scunthorpe fans because when they're not having the greatest of times, it's inevitable that supporters are always looking at the players who aren't in the team as the ones who are the answer that somehow the manager is overlooking them. And it probably will puzzle them that Wilson is scoring goals for Scarborough rather than scoring goals for them. But he is... I say a point not especially helpful for either team yesterday. I think Scarborough's playoff chances went quite a while ago. Warrington's are fading with that result yesterday.
Looking at the bottom end of the National League North, Bishop Stortford, as we know, have gone. It may not be long before Gloucester and Banbury join them. Banbury, in fairness, do have a couple of games in hand on the rest, and they were frustrated on Saturday when their game against Hereford was called off. We've already talked about Rushall Olympics' narrow defeat at Alfreton, and Darlington, just outside the pack, also lost. Farsley, Dickie, scraped themselves a point, and it could be a valuable one, despite having a bit of red card action in that one as well.
Yeah, I wouldn't have thought this would have been a game that would have fitted the description easy on the eye yesterday. I might get a few brickbats for that one. But yeah, Farsley got a goalless draw at home to Southport at the Citadel. It was Tom Allen who saw the yellow card, not the comedian, but the exceptionally tall central defender who plays for Farsley. Yeah, so he's going to miss a game with the suspension now. Again, I think... A point isn't especially helpful for either side in their situations. And I don't think any of them under direct threat. I think Southport probably done enough in recent weeks to pull themselves away. But momentum isn't with Farsley and they really could have done with all three yesterday.
Well, that rounds up our National League review. But before we finish, we do have to look ahead to Bank Holiday Monday's action. Prior to the Maidenhead Aldershot game, I had a really interesting chat with Keith Higgins, who's the NLTV commentator for Maidenhead. And we both had good wishes for a certain person involved with Maidenhead United as well.
We've been joined pre-match here at York Road, Maidenhead United against Shots today, by Keith, who is the commentator for NLTV. And he'll be the other side of the ground, up in that gantry, and hoping he doesn't get blown off it this afternoon. Keith, good to speak to you. Good to meet you today as well. Maidenhead, everybody every year writes them off, but they always find a way. But do also have a habit of winning three in a week and then sliding for the next 4 weeks, don't they?
Absolutely, Rob. Thanks very much, by the way, for giving us the chance to chat to you. Yeah, I mean, last home game was against Dorking just over, 3 weeks ago. And they won 4-2 and we thought, hey, we're going to, you know, we've got 45 points. Just need to pick up a few more points and we'll be safe. Two successive away defeats and suddenly we're just 1 point above the relegation zone. We've lost seven of our last nine. It's not looking good at the moment. We've got to turn that form round. So, but as you said, every season since we come up from the National League South, we find a way. I don't know what it is. I'm just hoping that there is a way for us this year just to get away a little bit more from the bottom four.
And up front, you've often had a talent that's come in, you know, scored goals, moved up the leagues.
struggled a bit, it's fair to say, in front of goal this season, but you brought someone in who knows this league well, and he's got a couple of goals already. Tristan Abraham, what are your initial thoughts on him?
Don't be too rude, but certainly an improvement on what we had before, but I won't mention any names. A couple of goals. Looks a bit of a heavy touch, but certainly as given the some of the games we've had, Rob, it's been like defence against attack. You know, we clear the ball, we can't hold it, and it's like it comes back again. And, it means that the defensive midfield are under constant pressure. At least Abraham seems to give us a little bit more of an outlet. And he's got a couple of goals, took his goal against Dorking very well. So hopefully he'll just give us that little bit of impetus. Otherwise, we're relying on Reece Smith in midfield, who's been head and shoulders our best player this season, 10 goals. He got injured against Rochdale in the last game. I'll keep my fingers crossed he'll be fit for today.
Yeah, I watched him just 10 days or so ago in Swansea, playing for England C. And he was very impressive that night. In all fairness, he was on the set pieces and they weren't too good, but overall, he brought a lot of strength to the team. Is he a player that you can or will hang on to for next season? There's got to be clubs looking at him.
I know for a fact, no names mentioned, but there is a league club that have got him very close on their radar. And the fact he didn't go there during the January transfer window was a bit of a relief for us. Maynard's history has been that ever since we've come into the National League, the top striker from the previous season has gone on. If I give you a couple of names, last season it was Emulakwa, yep, who's now scoring goals for Barrow. And when we first came into the league, we had a wonderful striker called Dave Tarpey.
Absolutely.
Scored 40-plus goals. I think he scored 7 goals in 4 games at the beginning of that season, ended up at Barnet. So I think Reece is going to be the same way. He is our top goal scorer. If you want my honest opinion, I think he will be going to a league club. And Maynard are the sort of club, Alan Devonshire and Ryan Peters, the management team, they will support him 110%. If he goes to a good club and it's in the EFL, there'll be nothing but supportive of him. And if that's what happens to him, I wish him well, because he's a super little player, a super lad.
And final question, York Road. We hear rumblings from time to time that the club's looking elsewhere. What's the latest that you've heard?
We're here. I'm afraid the support that we were expecting from the Royal Borough of Windsor and Maynard in terms of moving not too far away, there's a sports centre just on the road down to the M4 at Braywick. Change of political party in charge of RBWM, Royal Borough of Windsor and Maynard. Last Thursday, there was a meeting with the fans and it's off the table. The club have decided that, much as they don't agree and really think it's a poor decision, they can't afford to fight it. So they will go ahead. We're going to be at York Road for a while. And one consolation, if you're a historian, then at least you can say you've been at the longest consecutive ground where they played football since the 1870s. I've got my facts right there. So a little bit of light. But to be honest with you, I'm disappointed. I really thought that, a town the size of Maidenhead would want to support a side that, you know, has been in the National League for some time. But there you go. I'm not a politician, Rob.
Thank you very much, Keith, for enlightening us. And just while we're talking Maidenhead, all our very best wishes go to Grace, who is the media manager here, but duty's suspended at the minute while she tackles a rather bigger fight.
Absolutely. Grace, if you're listening to us, we wish you all the well. Deeply thinking of you. Hope, Robbie, don't mind me by saying that I know one of the best tonics we can give you, Grace, is for the Magpies to get 3 points today. Tough game, not sure that they will, but if they can, it'll be a great tonic for you. Get well soon, Grace.
So, quick turnaround, one day's recovery and one day's preparation for all our National League clubs who go again on Monday. In the National League, some cracking looking matches again. Aldershot Town on the edge of the playoff picture against Dorking Wanderers, who are desperate for points anywhere, anyhow, anyway, anytime. Altrincham against Oldham, another opportunity for Alty to keep Oldham at bay. Barnet and Bromley have favourable-looking matches against Oxford City and Woking, although the visiting teams there may disagree. Kidderminster aren't going to find points any easier to gather away at Chesterfield. Dagenham take on Ebbsfleet. Ebbsfleet desperate to pick up some more points to get to safety. And for Eastleigh and Maidenhead, it's not quite done. They'll come together at the Silver Lake. And then FC Halifax Town against York, another game in which both sides will be desperate for points. Less so, perhaps, between Rochdale and Hartlepool, Boreham Wood will go to Southend and Roots Hall in search of those elusive points that will take them to safety. And finally, Wealdstone, still not done at home to Solihull Moors, who've been dogged against everybody all season. Joe, just coming back to you, National League South, what have we got to look forward to later on in the bank holiday weekend?
Well, we've got another local derby for Yeovil. They have the early game away at Weymouth. I will actually be at that game, but won't be able, unfortunately, to get any audio because this game is in such high demand that the media box is full for this one. I was informed, but that should be a really, really good game. There's a couple of tasty ties down near the foot of the table, mainly Torquay at home to Western Supermare. And then perhaps the pick of the games is Worthing against Hampden and Richmond, two sides in the battle for the playoffs. And they go head to head on Monday afternoon.
Dickie, what catches your eye in the National League North for Monday?
Well, I think Tamworth's trip to Brackley is the obvious one because Tamworth could seal the title there. And of course, they could seal it even if they don't get a positive result themselves, because if Chorley fail against Blyth, then that would mean the gap would be too great to them as well. So that one, I think Brackley have actually handed over an extra parts of the stadium for Tamworth. I think they're making upwards of 1,000 tickets available for Tamworth there, which makes good sense from Brackley, because obviously the more fans that they can get in, the better in terms of their own income. I know it might not sit well with some fans in, you know, why are we giving them extra parts of our stadium? But I don't think you have to be churlish about these things. I think we have to accept that Tamworth are going to go up. I think the other two games that catch my eye are Chester against Alfreton, in terms of that chase for the playoff place for one of them. And there was another one as well, Kersnaston against South Shields. I think those are both six-pointers, really. I think for the teams that are in the playoff places, I think they would further cement them if they can get those wins. I think if for the teams that are just outside, if they can get them, just turns up the heat even more.
So a big crowd expected at Brackley, and I think it's very, very likely, if not mathematically certain, that they're going to be in the playoffs again, Dickie. And I don't know if you can remember the stat. I mean, it's just relentless, isn't it, Brackley? Every year in the playoffs and never progressing from them.
Yeah, I think it's probably about five or six seasons in a row now.
Fantastic stuff. Dickie, thank you very much. Joe, thanks for joining us. Go and get that laptop fixed or treat yourself to a new one. Thank you, listeners, for joining us as ever. Have a good rest of the Easter weekend. Play the theme tune, Luke.